Okay, so I'm going to finish. I've almost finished, in fact, on empire, liberties, and decolonization. And then I'm going to go back to the one I stopped in the middle of because I thought I didn't have time to finish it. So we were just looking at this transformation of the empire into the Commonwealth and this particular picture that suggests that initially the idea of the Commonwealth was just the British Empire with a different name. But gradually they were almost obliged, really, to take a different attitude. And so here you have the British Commonwealth with, first of all, New Zealand and Australia. But as you can see behind, the coloured colonies getting involved with the Commonwealth. So that's just this is a cartoon to mock the old-fashioned people who still think that the empire is what is required. I wonder if I can almost close that, but not quite. There you go. So, once it became clear that the Commonwealth was important for the future of British influence in the world, they had to change the idea of the Commonwealth. Initially, the Commonwealth was countries which were allowed to govern themselves, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, etc., but which maintained loyalty to the British Crown, at least theoretically. And this is why you have this rather unusual example of Ireland, where Ireland had gone to war with Britain to win its independence, and the south of Ireland got its independence as the Irish Free State, but still, the head of state was still officially the King of England from 1922 until 1949. This caused tremendous problems politically in Ireland, because in various situations, if you wanted to be part of the government, in various situations you had to swear an oath to the monarch. And many Irish politicians found that impossible to do. And so that caused a lot of problems, which Ireland will solve in 1949 by deciding to be a republic. This question of the relations with Ireland is quite delicate. Perhaps you don't know, but during the Second World War, the Irish Republic was neutral, did not take sides. They built up their army in case they got invaded by one or the other, both of which were perfectly possible. The British elite decided they didn't want to invade Ireland because they had enough people to fight, and they were sure the Irish would fight. The Irish would not accept it. And the Germans never managed to. This occasionally caused diplomatic problems. When Hitler died, the Irish ambassador gave official regrets to the German government that your great leader has died, you know, as governments do around the world. And obviously this was very controversial. So the Commonwealth was changing. They realized that a Commonwealth without India, so India was getting its independence, and the British government realized that a Commonwealth without India was a lot weaker. I mean, India is such an enormous country. And so they said, well, we need India and Pakistan in the Commonwealth, and so let's change the rules. It's not necessary to have allegiance to the Crown. The rule was changed, the Commonwealth was changed, and the 1949 London Declaration allowed both Crown dominions, which have the British monarch as their head of state, yeah, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, etc., and South Africa, and Republican dominions, which did not. India, for example, and not Ireland. Ireland does not go into the Commonwealth. So we have some more of the cartoonists of the time and how they react. And what seems to be happening here is that here you have the scouts, and they are heading for the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth is over here. And they're wondering, where will India go? And India joins them to go the Commonwealth way. It's not an amazingly funny cartoon, but it's just one of them at the time, Leslie Gilbert. and another, David Lau, then they're not always supposed to be amusing, they're just representing, yes, and so there you have the old man of history. When they allow India into the Commonwealth, but remaining a republic, this is seen as history turning the page. The old history is finished, imperial possessions, it's finished, and the new history, completely clean. Now, of course, it's an exaggeration. All of the colonies in Africa still haven't got their independence, and they are still considered as really imperial possessions, so it's a little premature. This is 1950. So, but yeah, a representation of the change going on. The monarch remains the overall head of the Commonwealth, so India also has to make a little bit of compromise, that they are not obliged to swear allegiance to the monarch, but they're obliged to accept that the monarch remains the overall head of the Commonwealth. As described in a Colonial Office paper of 1950, the aim was for a new Commonwealth to be a circle of democratic nations exerting a powerful, stabilizing influence in the world. Now, of course, from the point of view of the imperialists, this was already the case. The supporters of the British Empire had always thought the British Empire exercises a powerful stabilizing influence in the world, but of course it did not have a circle of democratic nations in the previous period. So, just to conclude on empire, the empire was, for a long period, really rather popular in Britain. At the beginning of the 20th century, every year they would have Empire Day, and it was a big popular festival. At the very least, people accepted that the British Empire was a wonderfully positive thing. There are a big variety of reasons why British people accepted and supported the Empire. Many of them supported the Empire because they thought British white people were superior to everybody else. Some of them supported the Empire slightly more acceptable reasons today. Stability, or just because it seemed to be so enormous and so powerful. So for many British people over a very long period, possession of an empire has been an essential part of their sense of Britishness. Pride in a territorial British Empire dates at least from the mid-18th century, and it continued until well after World War II. Certainly in the First World War, many songs about the empire and how India is happy to fight with Britain, and songs about African soldiers and how wonderful they are during the First World War. So before the 1950s, there were only a small minority rejected the imperial connection completely. We saw this morning with Ramsay MacDonald, leader of the Labour Party from a poor background, and he thought the empire was wonderful, described it in very traditional ways, mentioning God and God's will for the world and so on. Nothing changed there. There was nevertheless a lot of debates as to the values that the empire should embody. So within the relative consensus that the British Empire was a good thing, you had people arguing. So some people would say, women should not have the vote because the British Empire represents power and the correct roles for women. In other words, people say, no, women should have the vote because the British must give the example to the empire of the new modern ideas. Yeah, so inside this empire idea, still a lot of debates. And these were ultimately debates about Britain's own values. From the 18th century onwards, critics of the conduct of imperial administration argued that it betrayed British ideals of freedom. Although most people accepted that the British Empire was a good thing, This doesn't mean that they were not criticised when the obviously for, in the earlier periods on the slave trade, but also when there was the rebellion in India, there were plenty of people in Britain to criticise, a minority, but an important minority to criticise, or in the Boer War, or in the war against the Zulus in the 1870s, there was always critical voices. Because the British Empire was this rather strange animal where inside Britain there was a relatively free political debate, but of course that freedom was not extended to the rest of the empire. Of course the empire also fostered a sense of superiority, and some people tell me the British have not yet got rid of this idea of being superior. Probably true. And racial arrogance, well. There's plenty of that around. And on the other hand, for many people, the empire embodied the highest qualities of Britishness, which very often they supposed to be manliness, courage, and discipline, but also self-sacrifice and disinterested service to others. So certainly, people believed this, and the whole. I know that the scout. System, the scoutisme, in France has a bit of a different image from in Britain, and certainly in Britain it had, until very recently, a very positive image about learning to help other people, etc. But of course it also was absolutely imperialist. It was established by Baden-Powell, who was one of the fighters for Britain in the Boer War. But it's an interesting example, the Scouts, because it was a very popular first of all British and then international movement to teach young boys, the girls came afterwards, yeah, but to teach young boys the values which were considered to be the positive values of Britishness and of the empire, especially helping each other, you know, we, of course, bien sûr, on se moque facilement les bonnes actions une fois par jour. At the same time, it was something very specific at a time in history and at a period in history which was a lot less cynical than today is, yeah. People certainly took it very seriously. And the other thing, and this still can be the case today. I mean, I know. In fact, this is a little story. My neighbour, who lives upstairs from me, in Montreuil, comes from Senegal, and he came to France, and he became part of the Scouts here, and he found the Scouts 20 years ago. The Scouts, one of the most anti-racist organisations. Who really integrated people from different origins in a way that doesn't always happen. It sometimes works. The other elements of the reasons that people believed in the empire and people didn't want to see a lot of the very, very negative things, were the liberal and evangelical ideals, the origin spreading Christianity, but also a powerful sense of imperial duty and mission. So the people who defended the empire said the empire is there to civilize and raise up the subjects of the empire. Now, we recognise that today as something which is really not very democratic way of looking at the world, but it's important to see where it came from and also to see that for the mass of the British population, when they thought about, oh, we need to civilise these other people from elsewhere, they were coming from a position where they had no information about what Indians were like or what Africans were like. It's not like today where you can put on the television and you find out about things around the world. Yeah, so based on a sort of rather provincial ideology and a rather